Hey everyone, it's Rich Bennett, host of Conversations with Rich Bennett, bringing you an exciting chance to win with our latest giveaway sponsored by Tar Heel Construction Group. Get ready to make a splash just by tuning in to the podcast. Yes, you heard that right. While you're soaking up our latest episodes, listen closely for a special splash sound. When you hear it, remember the episode name. Here's what you do next. Shoot us an email at podcast@harfordcountyliving.com with the episode title. Each splash sound means a new chance to win. So the more you listen, the better your chances. If you don't have email, then just leave a voicemail from our website at conversationswithrichbennett.com. What's the prize? How about a brand new waterproof Bluetooth speaker? Perfect for listening to our episodes, whether you're in the bath, on the beach, in the pool, or on the go. You have until the end of May to send in your entries, and we'll announce the lucky winner on June 3rd. Don't miss out on this splashy opportunity brought to you by Tar Heel Construction Group. Dive into our episodes and win big. On this episode of Conversations with Rich Bennett.
And I was at the primary care, remember, like the day before I discovered it, and she didn't feel anything. So I'm so thankful that I did have that appointment, because I thought that that kind of would help my like case, so to speak, that people would believe me that this came out of nowhere or that it was growing rapidly. But it was, I feel like I'm dragging it out, but it was one doctor after another, after another, after another. Basically, like, some of them like kind of laughed, you know, at the situation, or that I was worried, like, oh, this happens all the time. This is normal.
Coming to you from the Freedom Federal Credit Union Studios, Harford County Living presents Conversations with Rich Bennett.
Come on.
You're faster than me.
Guys.
Yeah.
We've been together.
It's 24 and
13. Oh, man, you already said it. I was going to ask her if she remembered the dates.
So I am sitting here with actually my newest co-host, Kayla Dykeman, who eventually is probably going to take over the show because she's already giving me a hard time. And she brought in a friend of hers, Natalie Corcoran, and I put a thing out to all my co-hosts asking them for some ideas and subjects to talk about. And, of course, a few of them gave me some, and Kayla gave me one. And, of course, you know, just like everybody else, if Kayla says jump, I say how high. Mm-hmm. So what are we going to be talking about today, Kayla? Why are you laughing at me?
Because you're easy to laugh at. It's okay. I love you.
Is it because I'm funny looking or funny? Or
you're hilarious.
What I'm saying is funny. Okay.
You're hilarious. Right. Take that how you will, but you're hilarious. So we're going to talk about chronic health issues and how women are oftentimes brushed aside when getting any type of diagnosis.
So, from the doctors.
Okay. So this has been an ongoing issue, and I know that it's commonly talked about in social media nowadays. Mm-hmm. So for all my TikTok friends, I'm sure you've heard of multiple conditions becoming more quote unquote popular,
right,
when the conditions have always been out there. They've just been underdiagnosed. These are things like mental health conditions all the way down to physical conditions. I know personally I've dealt with a lot of things involving both areas. However, I know that I want to hear my friend here, Natalie's story about how this all kind of happened to her. I know she's been through some stuff recently, so.
Yeah, and I forgot about, like, the online stuff, though. I don't know if it's because I'm going through stuff, but you know how when you notice stuff, then you start seeing it everywhere, or when you're going through something? There are so many stories online of people that are dying because they went in and they said all these things were happening to them, and nobody was listening to them, and they're literally dying. I've seen like two of them recently, like young women, and it shouldn't be happening. And I don't know if it's because of COVID that everyone now, all the doctors and nurses think that people are overreacting. I don't know.
Right.
But so with my situation, I have to go back a little bit. So my daughter passed away when she was 3 from leukemia, and
oh, man.
I know. And it was really sudden. We only knew about it for 3 days. And she was pretty much passing, like, when they told us that she had leukemia. And given everything that we went through, I think that I was still pretty, I don't know, like, handled it well, I feel like. You know, I had another daughter. I got pregnant with her like 4 months after my daughter passed. And I was not, you know, a hypochondriac with my daughter. She's 9 now. We're not at the doctor's all the time. Honestly, we probably don't go enough. I don't know. You know, I don't worry about every little thing.
Right. You are taking her for her vaccinations.
Yes, okay. I do that. Yes, we do all that.
So in other words, Natalie is not a bad mother.
and you work with kids on a regular, so you're used to seeing, like, just having sick germs.
Yeah, like little
sick germs.
Like things go around. And I think I'm kind of proud of the way that, it'll be 11 years next month since my daughter passed. And I feel like I am proud of the way that I handled things. Anybody would have maybe a little bit of, if you want to use the word anxiety, I don't even know. You know, I mean,
anxiety or even depression from, you know, because you're losing.
That's a big loss.
Especially losing a child.
Yeah.
A lot of people do fall into depression.
And certain things will trigger, you know, your anxiety or your worry. But overall, I feel like I haven't worried about things with myself or my daughter. So in September, I needed to have a physical. You have to have a physical every 2 years when you have daycare. So I needed to have a physical.
She runs daycares.
Yeah.
It's great.
So I have a licensed daycare. I'll say that in my home. It is licensed. But for a couple of weeks, I had been feeling like a weird little spot on the side of my neck. I mentioned it to my mom, and, you know, she's like, just get it checked out. So I mentioned it to the doctor, but I was already going there. So she checked that, and she's like, oh, it's just a swollen lymph node. And I was like, okay, well, it doesn't feel like the same kind of swollen lymph node. I had strep throat last year, and that I could tell. I knew what that was. So, but she thoroughly examined my whole neck. And I had told her how I was also having, like, weight issues. I'd lost 60 pounds, but then I started, like, gaining. And I had worked out a lot in August. No, this is September.
Okay.
I said I worked out a lot. I did this St. Jude challenge, and I ran 62 miles. And I didn't lose a pound, like, over the course of the month.
Yes, wait a minute. So you lost 60 pounds in a month?
No.
Oh, okay. Jesus. Wow.
No, that's not normal.
I was going to say, that's not healthy either.
That's not normal. No. In 2021, I started, like, my, you know, taking care of myself.
Right.
And it was great. So over between 2021 and 2023, actually, I'd lost it probably in that first year, maintained it.
Right.
But I started gaining weight in the summer, and I started working out a lot in August and didn't lose anything. And I worked out more than I ever had, and I was drinking a ton of water. I was doing everything right. And I just mentioned it. I said, I don't know what's going on. So she put me on phentermine, which is appetite suppressant. I don't know if you know it. I had been on it before. So it, you know, suppresses your appetite. And usually
you're familiar with it at this point.
And it always worked well with me. I didn't have, like, blood pressure issues with it or anything. So I left there. The next day, I went to swallow, actually, the phentermine. And it went down funny. And I thought, huh, that's weird. I was, like, kind of stuck there. I don't know what's going on. Didn't really think anything of it. Went home. My mom was at the house with the daycare kids. Went home. I was taking a selfie of me and another daycare child. And I noticed in the picture that there was a lump in my neck. And that's how people do notice those things. Have you heard of, like, what's the guy on TV, like, not Trading Space, Flip or Flop or whatever?
Yeah. The brothers?
No,
the other one. Okay.
Yeah. You don't know. You're just like the other
one.
No,
I do. I love watching them home shows.
This was like
Well, there's a couple of different ones, too.
Yeah, there
this
is.
This was a husband and wife, and they're not together anymore. And I think that, I don't know, they might still do the show together. I don't know. But a viewer saw him have, like, a lump, and he went and checked it out, and it was, like, a thyroid thing. So, and I've read somebody else that had it, like, a newscaster. Yeah, so I noticed in this selfie, I saw, like, a big lump, and I went in the bathroom, and I'm checking, and I'm like, wow, that's weird. That's not normal. And it was a Friday. I remember that specifically. And I didn't say anything to anyone, which is not like me. So I'm brushing off my own stuff at that point.
Yeah.
So the next day, we had a gender reveal party for my brother and his fiance that we were planning, so I didn't want to, like, bring it up to anyone.
Right.
At the end of the party, I took my mom to the bathroom, and I showed her, and the face that she made, I was like, okay, maybe I should take this seriously. She was, like scared. So it kind of made me just, not more scared, but made me realize, like, okay, maybe I should go, like, get this checked out now. Why not? I mean, this is weird. So we go to Upper Chesapeake, and they did blood work, and the male doctor comes in, and he was like, okay, well, your blood work's good, like, you know, you can go. And I said, okay, like, my blood work's good, but I have like this golf ball in my neck. And I said, it's hard to breathe and I have to sleep elevated. I don't really want to go home because I'm worried.
Yeah.
And then I mentioned my daughter. And I mentioned it because my daughter's cancer was so aggressive. It was so fast.
Right.
And it was abnormal. It's not the norm. It's not how things go.
Well, and there shows familial history on top of that.
Like, if it could happen to her, why couldn't it happen to me? Right. That's not a crazy thought. Like, who wouldn't mention that?
Yeah.
And I felt when I mentioned it, I don't know. I didn't get the vibe there necessarily, but just more so he was like, oh, okay, like, that's why she's worried kind of thing. Not he wasn't more worried. It was mm-hmm. like, that's why she's worried. I don't know. So he's like, well, do you want us to do a scan? I was like, yes, yeah. I do. I was like, yeah, that's exactly how
blood
I said it.
Blood work's not going to show everything.
Right. Exactly.
Right. And I know that. Like, I have, I don't know, there's more reasons why I think that. But so we do a CT scan, and it shows, he said it was like a 2-centimeter nodule, and that there were multiple nodules. I couldn't think of the word. I'm looking at you, and I'm like, what's the thyroid thing? What's the So, but he was like, you have to, you know, go get an ultrasound in a couple days. Okay. And I'm like, why can't we do an ultrasound? And he said that there wasn't anyone there that could do. Yeah. But I mean, it's a hospital. You have ultrasound machines. I've been to upper chest before for a fetal ultrasound in the emergency room. Yeah. I know they have one.
but it depends. They have to have somebody there that can run it for that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because like when you're pregnant, that's different than say, like when I had to get my heart, the sonogram is different. I don't know why.
I know. I thought they were. I don't know. You don't know all of it? If you're, okay.
I have no idea. It's weird.
But so they weren't able to get it done that same day. So how long did you end up having to wait in order to get it done?
So that was Saturday. So on Tuesday, I had an ultrasound.
They got you in pretty quick. I mean, that's pretty quick now.
Yeah. There was. Yeah, I got in pretty quick at Advanced Radiology. And, you know, I can read an ultrasound. Mm-hmm. You know, the images are right on the portal. So at that point, it was 5 centimeters. So in my mind, you know, I was told it was 2, and now I'm told it's 5. Yeah, it was 3 days, and it's 3 centimeters more.
Which is rapid growth, yeah. If you right. would put it
so,
out there.
So, well, they did tell me there, though, that CT scans can be inaccurate. So either way, it's 5 centimeters. So it wasn't 2, you know, it's 5. And 5 centimeters is the size of a lemon. I was looking at this chart at Upper Chesapeake with my mom of, like, when they worry, you know, what mm-hmm. size is a dangerous thyroid nodule? When do they do surgery, you know? And 5 is beyond their, like, threshold, you know? They want to probably remove them after, like, 4.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
The CT scan did show me my trachea was deviated to the right, which I knew. I was having trouble breathing. I had to sleep elevated so that it wasn't compressing it more, you know? So I see that it's 5 centimeters. I think that was the day. I think I went to a different hospital that day because, you know, my concern is a little more like heightened at this point mm-hmm. now. I'm thinking it's rapidly growing. My daughter's tumor at Upper Chesapeake was like dime sized. They flew her to University of Maryland and it was baseball size within
Jesus.
Like hours. Right. So this is what I have to go off of. And like I said, if it happened to her, why couldn't it happen to me? And that's a 1 in a million thing. So that's why they're like, oh, well, that's a 1 in a million thing. And I'm like, okay, well, it happened to me.
Well,
so like
now you're having something that's
twice.
Similar.
Like mm-hmm. just so, but I'm not being
that
know,
would be
emotional.
A valid concern.
Yeah, I'm not being like emotional there or like.
You were keeping your calm.
Yeah. I think when I did go to GBMC that night, I think there was a point where I did start crying. But nothing.
You were just
like
overwhelmed with the whole situation at that point. Too.
Yeah. So when we were at GBMC that night, so this was like a Tuesday or when it was a Tuesday. The doctor comes in. I think I am crying to my mom, but nothing like crazy, you know, teary eyed, like not like sobbing. And he goes, well, we see you're really upset. Like we're going to give you something to like calm you down. And I was like, huh? He like a sedative of some sort. And I looked at my mom and I was like, I'm afraid to take this because I know like what I'm thinking. I know the thoughts I have. I know what I want to talk about. Like, mm-hmm. you're going to have to like do that for me now. I don't know what he's giving me. And I honestly can't remember right now, but I felt high after that kicked in, like really high and goofy, like drunk, but in a goofy way, I guess.
Right.
I don't know. And he came in, and he, I think it was that night, they kept me overnight. I was really hoping they were going to, like, take this thing out. And I think that's why I started crying. I've only been put under once. I was, you know, nervous, like, all that. But he came in, and he specifically said, I feel like this is just anxiety related. And I was like, what do you mean? I mean, there's a mass in my throat. Like, I didn't, like, I'm not making this up.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, it's on
anxiety
paper.
Related. Like, this isn't, like, okay. And then he specifically said, like, I think you have PTSD. And I'm like,
huh?
Okay, my daughter's been gone for 10 years, and you've never seen me here before. Like, I don't go to Upper Chesapeake. I don't go to GBMC. I don't hospital hop, doctor hop. I've been seeing the same primary care for as long as I can remember. They don't know me. Meaning I'm not there all the time. You know, I'm not a hypochondriac. Yeah. I'm not there, like.
And he wasn't a therapist, right?
Right. He's not a therapist or a psychologist. He is not equipped to diagnose that on the fly.
And I'm sorry, but
the nodule, the mass.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I don't think that's a determination of whether you got PTSD
or not. That's not psychosymptomatic when there is a fool, like, in front of your face.
My mom was shocked at it. I think I might have still been high at that point. I don't know. But, like, and then he read the reports wrong. So I was stalking the advanced radiology report. I wanted to get that report because
The report. Okay. I'm glad you said that. You just said stalking at first.
No, I had the images, but I didn't have a report that was reviewed that was going to tell me, you know, what they saw.
Because this was in such a tight time frame.
Right.
Like, I was examining those pictures. I was showing them to people that I know that work in the medical field. And I'm like, okay, so what is it being solid mean? What is it being isoechoic mean? What is, you know, all of those things. So it wasn't looking great to me or to anybody. Like, this, the things that we could tell that it had were things that would mean thyroid cancer. Like, I mean, it was predominantly solid. It was not cystic. It was not fluid filled. Like, you know, my 9-year-old could tell you that. So, like, anybody, like, being worried about it would be, this is normal worry. Like, forget that don't forget I lost a child. But, like, that aside, anybody would be worried that. And I was at the primary care, remember, like, the day before I discovered it, and she didn't feel anything. So I'm so thankful that I did have that appointment, because I thought that kind of would help my, like, case, so to speak, that people would believe me that this came out of nowhere or that it was growing rapidly. But it was, I feel like I'm dragging it out, but it was one doctor after another after another after another. Basically, like, some of them, like, kind of laughed, you know, at the situation, or that I was worried, like, oh, this happens all the time. This is normal. So the GBMC doctor read the report wrong. The report wasn't in yet from advanced radiology. I had gone that day, and I went to GBMC, like, that night. So it wasn't ready yet. So he comes in, and he goes, I think it's anxiety. I think it's PTSD. Like, your tumor's only 2 centimeters. I read the report, and I was like, my mom and I both at the same time said, what report? It's not in yet. I was refreshing that page constantly. Yeah. I wanted to know. He was looking at the report from the other hospital on Saturday, where the CT scan said it was 2, not at anything from advanced radiology, where it was measuring as 5. And an ultrasound is more reliable in this situation, like, it is 5. So we got out of there. The one thing that he did do was set up an appointment with an endocrinologist that same day through GBMC. So we went over there after we got discharged, and that doctor was equally as dismissive. It's not cancer. That's what he said. It's, you know, and I get it. Like, statistically, sure, most of them are not. But, like, I don't know.
You still want to get it.
Yeah, like.
Don't dismiss valid concern.
And at one point, he laughed about something. I can't remember exactly what now. Like, just, we see it all the time. This is, you know, normal. And I'm like, okay. And I'm trying to explain that this came out of nowhere. That's the part that's really not normal to me. This came out of nowhere.
Well, and the fact that your concerns, you're going through multiple doctors and the concerns just aren't being heard.
Yeah. And so at that hospital, at that appointment, I honestly kept my cool, because he was going to be doing the FNA, like the fine needle aspiration. And I am such a, I don't know how, you know me, you've known me for, like, I don't know how long.
I've known you for almost 10 years.
I don't, I'm not confrontational. I don't really like speak up. I definitely don't.
She really doesn't.
And at that appointment, I looked at my mom like, oh, I'm going to, I feel like I'm going to like let my anger out on this guy. Like I'm going to like say something, but I didn't because I needed him to do the FNA. Just wanted that done. Mm-hmm. They want to go. It takes forever to get into an endo. Why could I get in that same day, by the way? That was a little weird. You know, like it takes a long time to get into one.
The endoscopy?
It was no, an endocrinologist. So it takes like months to get into one.
Okay.
Yes.
And I'm in the same day with this guy. Why? You know, like, yeah. I don't know. But like, I just remember him laughing and I just looked at my mom and it was just like, of all the last couple days built up, I was like, oh my gosh, like this guy's laughing. And I'm worried and I'm like hitting a wall here.
You're gonna lose it.
Yeah, I'm like, I'm hitting a wall here with all these people and I feel like I'm not being believed. I'm not being listened to. And I don't know if I was crying or not, but it doesn't matter. Like, I was just like, oh my gosh, I'm feel like I'm going to tell this guy to like, I don't know. Like,
take a hike.
Yeah. And just leave. I just wanted to like leave, like walk out. And that's not like me. I don't know. I don't even speak up enough for myself.
She's a perpetual people pleaser.
And what
yes,
year was
that's
this?
What
what
it
year
is.
Was this?
This was just in September.
Okay.
This was this past
okay.
year.
Yeah. So I went to one surgeon who again was right away like, this is, you know, not cancer. It's hardly ever cancer. I'm like, okay. Like, I really wasn't.
Even if it wasn't cancer, they should still look at removing the nodule. Yeah. It's causing you physical pain, like it's causing you trouble to breathe. So cancer aside, it's something that's got a valid concern behind it that needs to be looked into and that needs to be removed. If you can't breathe, you can't breathe.
Right.
Go on.
No, it's fine. And then, so I went to a second surgeon. There was more about that first one. I actually took a friend with me who works in the medical field because, you know, you want a second person there. You know, when I leave, I want to say, okay, did I not? She took notes, you know, like, mm-hmm. okay, did I hear this right? Or also, am I being, like, what's the word? Not a hypochondriac, but am I too much? Yeah, what, like, yeah, you know, just yeah. somebody else there that's not. Well, directly emotionally in the situation to let me know. Like,
and on top of that, I'm just mentioning this kind of out in the general world. It's always important, especially if you feel like your concerns in anything, whether it be mental health related or physical health related, make sure you're advocating for yourself. And if you mm-hmm. can't advocate for yourself, make sure you bring someone with you who can at least validate your information and also become that advocate for you who's not afraid to tell the doctor, hey, give them a minute.
Yeah.
Like, that's important.
And I think, you know, this situation has helped me definitely try to speak up for myself where I should have been all along, you know, just in a normal way, because I definitely don't tell people off or anything. But, like, I had done a lot of research. I mean, not, like, WebMD necessarily, but educating myself. I didn't know anything about thyroid anything before this, but I wanted to learn. I was, you know, studying ultrasound pictures online. I wanted to learn what it all meant. Yeah.
And I remember you were talking to me about it because I have previous experience with thyroid problems because I have a thyroid disease myself. So I remember the concern and all the questions that I was getting, and you know, they were accurate and valid questions to ask.
Yeah.
Like, you want to know these things about yourself when there's something going on.
Yeah.
So how long before they finally did something?
I finally got it out the day before Halloween. I went to a second surgeon.
So a month.
Yeah. It was about 2 full months. September 9th.
Okay.
September 8th was the day I discovered it. So I went to a second surgeon. He was okay. He also was kind of dismissive, but I stuck with him because I just needed to get it out.
So during this time, was it getting bigger?
We don't know for sure. Nobody ever actually can like.
Well, was it becoming hard? Was it becoming harder to breathe?
It was always. It was just like boom hard from the beginning. Right. Like from when I noticed it. And yes, because it was solid. It was hard.
And when you went to the second surgeon, it was obviously, even though he may not have taken you as serious as you wished and hoped, it was serious enough that it did have to be removed.
Oh, and he did say that. Yeah, he wanted to remove
like
it.
Like, it was causing issues with your breathing.
Yep.
And I remember the pictures. Like, that was a mess. It wasn't like...
I mean, I showed you the pictures after, right?
Yeah, you did.
I'll just show you later.
Did they ever biopsy it?
Yeah. So I mean, it wasn't cancer,
but it was a big enough nodule. It was causing problems.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. With the ultrasound, they score it. There's like a, I think it's called the triad. When you have a thyroid, it's like a, it was a triad 4. So it's out of 5, and it had, it gives you points. So when it's solid, you get so many points. When it's isoechoic, you get so many points. What were the other characteristics? Oh, it had microcalcifications. Yeah. So, and the only reason I knew about microcalcifications, a good friend of mine recently got diagnosed with brain cancer, like, out of nowhere. Had a seizure in the spring last year, and then, but there were, like, calcifications. And that, so that stuck out to me. I probably wouldn't have even known of that.
Well, and all of these are indicative of there being a bigger issue, and...
Yeah,
so, you know, I mean, so valid concern for feeling the way that you did.
Or something. Or like, oh, okay. I mean, like, obviously, like, I mean.
It's not great, but.
Cysts, ovarian or uterine. Yeah. And, you know, they come and go, whatever. But it wasn't. It was solid, and it, you know. It
wasn't
was,
going anywhere.
And no. And
solid is always concerning when it comes to any type of, like, tumor or nodule in this case.
When I saw the rating, I think, when that report came back. You know, I knew it was serious, and I wasn't being rational, you know, calling.
No,
crying,
I think we had all of like 3 conversations of it, and that's because
like
I was going to say they were normal conversations. There was no like hyper emotion about it or anything.
Honestly, I did feel thankful, like, because I knew that, and maybe it's because of my friend, but I knew that if it were cancer, if you're going to have
you
cancer,
would have a support
this
system.
Is like the cancer. That you quote unquote want to have
because it's removable.
Right.
You just take the thing out.
So I really wasn't scared
like
or worried.
Like some of your skin cancers. Yeah.
Like
was it basal cell? I think is.
I have no idea.
I know melanoma can just keep coming back.
Yeah, but there's certain ones that you know you can just remove an organ or you can remove a tissue and that the likelihood of it coming back is slim. And I know that thyroid cancer is one of those because your thyroid, you don't have it's a necessary organ, but it's not a necessary one that you have to like permanently have.
Right.
Like you have to have your heart to live. You don't have to have your thyroid because there's medications that you can take that will act the same as a thyroid. My personal thyroid issue, I have Hashimoto's disease. So my thyroid does produce the hormones it's supposed to release. However, my thyroid does not release those hormones. It doesn't work correctly. So I have to take medication in order to get those hormones, and that will in turn shrink my goiter that I typically have down, because then my thyroid says, oh, you're getting the hormone already. I don't have to produce this as much.
Mm-hmm.
So just like when you have your thyroid removed, you still have to have that hormone. So you're typically put on a synthetic version and you're on it just your life. And
the thing that gets me, in your case, you had
a physical.
Something physical they could see. It wasn't like fibromyalgia or lupus, which is hard, or even Lyme disease, which is hard to detect.
Mm-hmm.
This is something they could plainly see on the outside, not just from the ultrasound.
Oh, yeah, you could see. I mean,
yeah.
You could see it. It looked like
you saw
like you had another head.
Yeah. It was
maybe
so
not that
big.
Big
no,
it
was so big.
It looked like she swallowed like a whole golf ball. Like it was.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, it was, everybody could see it.
You know, picture of a snake that just ate a mouse?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was
your
neck.
Like there's an egg in my,
I don't need the picture. I used to have a snake. So how long before they actually removed it?
So it was end of October.
So it was Halloween when they did. Okay.
Yeah, the day before. So that second surgeon, like I said, he was a little dismissive in person. I did like him once we had another, we had a Zoom conference before the surgery, after the FNA came back, the biopsy. So the biopsy came back that it was kind of like inconclusive. They couldn't really tell. I don't think that endocrinologist did a very good like biopsy. He was
right.
There was just so many issues. But that the surgeon, the way the surgeon sounded that day on the Zoom call, I liked him more. He said, this can turn into cancer if you don't get this out, which I really, honestly didn't know. Like, I didn't know it worked like that.
No. I didn't know it worked like that.
And he tried to explain how an FNA works. Like, the fine needle biopsy, I mean, it was literally right there in the office, do the thing, and I leave my mom, you know, drive home with my mom. I mean, yeah, it didn't feel great. The lidocaine was the worst. Like, but he said it's like trying to, if you have a baseball or if you have a basketball, you have a baseball inside of the basketball, and you're trying to stab that baseball, the odds are you're not going to like
hit it all
hit
the
baseball. So it was kind of like that. Like, if you have a mask like this,
you they didn't put your ass under when they did that?
No.
Oh, hell, they didn't.
It wasn't like cut, like this slice, this is like the surgery, but so the biopsy wasn't like.
Yeah, that's that. Yeah, unfortunately.
But it still wasn't great.
They numbed it though, right?
But that was the painful part.
Them numbing it.
Yes.
Oh, because it was like a bee sting, wasn't it?
Yeah. The lidocaine. It was not. I didn't like that. But I wanted to get it done. Now, mind you, I was already like, I was a little fired up. Fired up for me is like. Right. Not, but I was already fired up, so I just, I guess, had that like adrenaline. Like, I wanted to get it done, and I wanted to get out of there. So. Yeah, it didn't feel great, but I wanted to get out of there. It did feel funny for a couple days. I remember it like, ugh, I didn't like it. It felt, it's kind of taking me back. I can remember for like a second what it felt like.
Sorry, y'all didn't see the face that she made. Because
I can remember it was like, it was like paralyzed and stiff, but in just in that area. And I don't know.
Now, from this whole experience that you have, did this change your viewpoint from before when, your viewpoint of doctors and the way medicine and just the whole system, medical system worked from before to now?
I felt like I was, I don't know how to compare it, like in the Twilight Zone where I know what's going on. My mom knows what's going on. My friends know what's going on. We're all like, I know I'm not being crazy, like the quote unquote crazy. Like I have people in my circle that are like, no, this is real. The ultrasound didn't look great. And then you have all these doctors telling you, oh no, this is normal. This happens all the time. Oh, they also said there's no way that this grew this fast. You know, this big, this fast. This had been happening for years.
Even though they had scans, they had all the proof in front of them. So
I felt like I was like, I don't know, in another world, like what? You guys aren't listening. Like this is,
like you were
happening.
In a dream, right. Almost.
Yeah, like.
Let's take a little break here. Since you're listening to the podcast, I know more than likely you are a fan of podcasts. And if you like listening to shows that cover a wide range of topics, then you need to check out the Chesapeake Podcast Network. The Chesapeake Podcast Network is a website that has a variety of podcasts from local creators in the Chesapeake Bay Area. Everything from true crime to cooking, there's something for everyone. One of the great things about the Chesapeake Podcast Network is the variety of shows. Whether you're looking for a deep dive into local history or a fun show about pop culture, you'll find it at ChesapeakePodcastNetwork.com. And if you're a creator yourself, the Chesapeake Podcast Network is the perfect place to put your show. It's free. So if you're a fan of podcasts or you want your show featured on the Chesapeake Podcast Network, just head over to ChesapeakePodcastNetwork.com today. You won't be disappointed.
And unfortunately, from what I've seen over the years and people who I've talked to, this is a common occurrence where...
Especially now.
Yeah, especially now where genuine concerns are being brushed aside. I know I've had situations because I was diagnosed with POTS syndrome, and that's very similar to when someone's diagnosed with lupus. It takes a really long time to develop those diagnoses, and mine was a little different than yours because I didn't have a physical bump or a physical bruise, or I didn't have this physical aspect that a doctor could look at and be like, something's wrong.
Right.
So I guess I sympathize with you because I can't even imagine having like a physical component and basically being brushed aside. Like that to me is crazy. In itself, just knowing that I spent 4 years and I passed out all the time. Regularly, and I was told that I was crazy, verbatim, I was crazy, and it was anxiety, and mind you, I've been in therapy since I was 12, and I'm open, I'm a big mental health advocate, right. I believe mental health care is really important, but I also do believe that the medical system as a whole is broken.
Oh, big time.
Yeah, so I went through the whole... you know, my therapist said, your anxiety's fine, like, right now. And at the beginning of the 4 years, I was managing. I was doing really, really well until doctors started to brush me aside and say, oh, this is normal. Oh, your blood work's fine.
I don't like that statement.
And and just because something's normal doesn't mean it's normal for you. And I was 24 at the time. I was 6.5 months pregnant with my son. I passed out in the OBGYN's office when I was taking the glucose test, which I don't like in general, but I have three children and I had never passed out before with this test. Mm-hmm. It did always make me really sick, but I never passed out. I never even threw up, and a lot of people throw up with the test. I remember standing up in the office, 6.5 months pregnant, walk into the window and saying, I think I'm gonna faint. And I had a nurse grab me before I hit the floor.
Wow.
It was kind of scary. And all that they could do for me in that office was say, like, try to wait for me to, like, become more coherent. And then, we're going to have your mom pick you up. And they said, in order to not scare the other patients, we're going to take you and wheel you around the other back way.
I feel like they should have had an ambulance pick you up.
I was at the hospital. I was at Upper Chesapeake.
There could have been so many other issues going on.
Right. And nobody wanted to check. And unfortunately, like, they were like, it's normal to pass out with a glucose test. Ladies, it is not normal to pass out with the glucose test unless you have diabetes, which is what they are testing for.
Right.
I did not, and I had never had gestational diabetes with any of my children prior.
Isn't it better to be safe than sorry? I didn't
get any checks while I was there. I mean, they did double check the heartbeat, but that was pretty much it at the time. And I was a high risk pregnancy due to preterm labor with my oldest. So I was on medication the entire pregnancy. I was in for weekly and biweekly checks. It was crazy to me. And these were women. These were women doctors who brushed my concern aside, saying it was normal. And I know, you know, you can pass out from exhaustion. You can pass out. But I was sitting down, and I passed out upon standing after drinking something sugary. Now, when you have POT syndrome, you have to eat in smaller increment meals because of the way your digestive system works. When you're when you are digesting food, blood rushes to where it needs to be to contract those muscles. And unfortunately, when you have POTS, your blood is not doing your blood pressure and all of that is not doing what it's supposed to do. So me digesting a sugary substance, which is a quick digestive product, similar to, like, carbs are typically quick mm-hmm. digesting. It's recommended for people with POTS to always, when you're eating carb, make sure you always have a protein because it slows that process down. Mm-hmm. And because of this, it did. It caused my blood pressure and everything basically to just, my heart rate rose, my blood pressure, I think, dropped, and then all of a sudden I was out. But I had been going through that for years before I finally had a doctor listen to me. The entire time I was pregnant, I brought this up. It keeps happening. What am I going to do? And they were like, it's just, you're pregnant. You're pregnant. You're a woman. You're pregnant. This is what happens. I'm sorry. Mm. Like, that doesn't happen. Like, once, maybe. Twice, probably not. As many times as it happened to me, definitely not normal.
Yeah.
And then from there, you're breastfeeding. You're breastfeeding. That's the problem. You're breastfeeding. And I was like, I'm breastfeeding, but I'm fainting.
Yeah.
I shouldn't be fainting. I was going to say, I had breastfed my other child for 15 months. And prior to this whole passing out, I had lost a lot of weight. I'm a 120 soaking wet, if I'm lucky. And I had lost 20 pounds after when I was breastfeeding my daughter. And it got to, like, really dangerous, like, things. And what we think is it was probably the onset of the POTS syndrome. Mm. And I just didn't know. And I got used to feeling like crap all the time.
Wow.
So now, 4 years later, it took – I went to three cardiologists. Two of them basically laughed and just said, you just have anxiety issues. I went to two primary physicians. My initial primary, who I had since I was 18, she actually stopped practicing, and I didn't particularly click with anybody else at the practice, so I did move practices, and I tried a practice in Abingdon, and it was a family practice, and, you know, I was told it's a great practice, and I went in there, and they made me feel so bad. Wow. I left, and I never looked back. I think I still even owe them a bill, now that I think about it. But they did an ultrasound of my heart. They did a blood pressure test, and they did do my blood work. But again, I was met with a man that basically was like, you're just psychosymptomatic. And I was like, I'm not crazy.
That's not his area.
I was like, I'm not crazy. I was like, I've been treated for anxiety issues since I was young, but I know it's not my anxiety.
And how can they say that to people? Because if she does have anxiety or she is seeing a therapist, like that can be really damaging to say to somebody.
Well, and prior to that, I was very confident with my anxiety. And over the course of the years of being constantly told by medical professionals, it was all in my head. I did start to get depressed. I got really depressed, and I started not wanting to go to doctors because I was so anxious that they were just going to tell me I was making it up.
Yes, that's I started to get anxious. Like,
right.
Mm-hmm. I'm like, they're not going to believe me. Like,
right. What is my word saying when I'm telling you how my body feels, but you're not taking me seriously? So, like, in the grand scheme of life, like, I did find a doctor that listened, and I found them last April. And, you know, 9 months later, I was diagnosed, not even April, I went in. I had to do some stuff with my insurance, so I had to wear, like, a Holter monitor, which I had been on 3 times prior. With POTS, Holter monitors don't typically pick it up because it's not an arrhythmia problem. It's a heart rate issue. So I put it on, did my 3-week stint, did another one for like a week or something. It wasn't anything crazy. Found out I was allergic to the adhesive that they used. So that was great to figure out. And then I had to do a treadmill test, which is basically running on a treadmill.
The stress test.
Yeah. Yeah. Problem with that, though, is I had knee surgery when I was 14. So, like, I can't run. Like, point blank, I can't run. So that kind of sucked. But then after that, I filled the insurance, like, quota.
So did you hit the treadmill?
The stress test?
Yeah,
they're fine. I thought you meant
it's just, like, general.
The last stress test I went in, they put me on the treadmill.
Yeah.
And they were saying that something wasn't reading right.
Oh.
So they took me off this treadmill and did the nuclear stress test?
Oh, is that the one where you're, like, squeezing things?
Oh, no, they sat me down and injected me with shit.
I don't know.
It would come to find out it was because I was having heart problems.
Yeah.
Or I thought it was. And it was the anxiety, and I was having panic attacks.
And you just didn't know that they were.
Yeah. But I had to wear a heart monitor. That's why they did the sonogram on my heart and everything, because I had to wear a heart monitor for a week, which is not fun.
No.
It's just a pain.
It is. I've been on 3 different versions of them, mm-hmm. and they all suck. But, like, so, like, I did all the tests to fulfill, and they put me on a tilt table test back in November.
The what?
It's a tilt table. So, essentially, you're laying on a flat table, and they slowly incline you into 90 degrees, which is vertical, people. It's vertical.
So, were your heads down or your heads
so
up?
So, they rest you so that you're laying flat.
Yeah.
And then they slowly incline you, and I think it's like over the course of like 60 seconds that they incline you to where your head's up and your feet are down.
I know, crack the back.
Yeah, right, I wish. But then, like, so then my feet, when I was upright, within 30 seconds, I got delirious. Like, my
your feet weren't on the ground.
No, you're essentially like strapped to this table. Like,
I mean, that would give me anxiety.
It did give me anxiety, and I was anxious out of it.
Yeah.
But then they did this, and they said, you know, if you do have this, it'll be an entertaining test. If you don't have this, you're going to be bored because you have to be strapped for 30 minutes.
But
I think
if you don't have it, couldn't it have still come up as something because you're anxious about being strapped to a table?
Not necessarily, because they're looking for...
They know the difference.
Yes. Yeah. So, like, you're looking for a 30... I think it's a 30 to 40 jump in your heart rate is what's considered POTS.
Oh, okay.
Gotcha. So my heart rate when laying flat, which is your baseline, was 86 beats per minute.
Jesus.
That's standard.
Why do you say Jesus, though?
That's your relaxed heart rate was?
Uh-huh. Why?
Mine's usually between 55 and 60, my relaxed heart rate.
No, my relaxed heart rate is like 110.
What?
Like 100.
Well, all right, hold on. 110 might be a little much. And that is since I don't want to take it off of you. I'm hitting the wrong button.
Well, so mine's not. So that was my relaxed heart rate.
It was 99 4 minutes ago.
Okay.
And we've been sitting here for over an hour.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, when the baseline was at 86, which is normal range for a woman that's my size and my age. Mm. So then when they increased it, it went up. And mind you, this is no physical activity. You're not even supposed to talk except to tell how you're feeling. They don't want you to move. They don't want you to – nothing to – increase your heart rate more than what just elevating yourself.
Mm-hmm.
So when they put me up, I was at 140. I think it was 148 or 147.
Oh, wow.
So my heart rate jumped and I was like, I'm dizzy. And
for real?
I didn't fully pass out, but it was really close. You're she
close
lowered
to
me
it.
Almost right away. I did not last the full 30 minutes that you're supposed to stand that first time around because I just couldn't do it. And I kind of, from that point, I get panicky when I know I'm going to pass out.
Yeah.
And that's just because I'm so used to passing out at this point that it does freak me out genuinely.
Yeah.
So I was like, okay, I recollected myself. They actually then inverted the table so my head's closer to the floor and my feet are up in the air to get the blood back to my brain. And I immediately started feeling better.
Mm.
Because with POTS, your blood doesn't circulate appropriately.
Oh.
So people with POTS, you might notice that they'll never sit pretty much upright. They'll always have their feet tucked under them. Like I am prone to not sitting on a couch appropriately.
All right, explain to the listeners what POTS is.
So POTS.
So they don't think we're sitting here smoking
tea. Yeah. So POTS is an acronym for postural orthostatic tachycardia syndrome. Essentially, it's a mouthful.
It was.
essentially, it's just the elevated heart rate upon postural, so the way that you're postured, orthostatic, the increase of your heart rate, tachycardia means, tachycardic heart issues. So once I did this test, it confirmed that I do have POTS syndrome, which I'm not going to pronounce it right because I can't. It's an autonomic nervous system disorder.
I don't know if you're pronouncing it wrong.
Autonomic. It messes with the anomic. It messes with a system in your body that controls a lot of things. This can be things from stomach issues to digestive problems. This is something that can cause you to, again, faint, lightheadedness, dizziness. It controls pretty much everything about my life from exercise. I can't over-exercise, but I can't under-exercise because if I do either of those things, my heart acts up.
Right.
I can't eat full meals because this is the way it was explained to me at the hospital. Imagine a normal portion sitting in front of you. Divide that into three. That's what I have to eat. A third of that meal over the course of so long, and then I can finish it so long. So my three meals a day might turn into six miniature meals and three snacks.
Wow.
And I'm taking time after each one to sit down and digest so that the increase of the blood in my, to make your stomach work doesn't cause me to accidentally pass out. The doctor at the hospital also said people with POTS tend to have a little bit less blood volume than an average person. So a woman typically, let's just say they have 5 liters of blood. Someone with POTS might only have 4.5. And that's not a problem in and of itself, but the act of you stand up, your blood goes all the way down to your feet and back up, that it's circulating. With POTS, it goes all the way down and kind of comes up. No, it might not come up all the way. And that leads to typically cold appendages. My hands and feet are constantly freezing. My husband calls me a permanent ice cube. It's all the circulatory stuff. But it's hard to prove that that's the problem when your symptoms are, I'm dizzy all the time.
Yeah.
My hands and feet are cold. Sometimes my heart feels like it's going to be fast. I pass out. That's it. Or my stomach hurts. And you might have 10 different doctors you're going to for these other symptoms and not dealing with the root cause. So, like, I've seen a gastroenterologist who basically told me, your stomach's just hurting because your stomach just hurts. I did have an endoscopy done. That was shown that there was nothing wrong with my stomach. I didn't have ulcers, but she gave me some, like, I think it was, like, magnesium or something like that to, like, coat my stomach so that, you know, if I did have an ulcer, it wouldn't mess. But people with POTS tend to not be able to eat. They feel full when they eat. This is also, like, a sign of, like, this thing called gastroparesis, which basically means, like, I don't want to say, like, your stomach's paralyzed. Your stomach just doesn't work correctly, which right. is common in 40% of people who have POTS. You typically have this. I remember going to my new cardiologist and being like, hey, I think I've got a heart something. And I didn't want to tell him anything that I knew about what I had researched about POTS. And I kept my mouth shut because I didn't want him to think that I was doctor shopping mm-hmm. for a condition. I didn't want him to think anything less of me. I told him, I've been told that it's nothing. I've been told that I'm just anxious, but I really would want you to look at this. My doctor said, no, something's wrong. And I don't think I've ever been met with validation from a medical professional like that. He was like, something is wrong with you. You're 27. You shouldn't be passing out. And you said this has been going on for how long? He's like, why has nobody done anything for you?
And this shouldn't be the rare thing to find right. somebody who's saying that.
Exactly. Yes. And it was very... I broke down in that office that day, and I basically told him, you're the first person who's ever listened to me. And from there, it was, you know, I did the couple tests that he had me run. He called in his specialist that worked in his office every once in a while. I think he comes in like once or twice a week. But the specialist is he's not an average cardiologist. He handles other things. And he came in that same day. Like he said, wait in the waiting room. He'll be here in an hour. This guy came in, took me out, and he was like, I think you've got this condition. I want you to go be seen at Sinai Hospital. Scheduled me. I was at Sinai within, it was like 2 weeks. And within those 2 weeks, I had my diagnosis of POTS syndrome. And since I had that, I now know how much salt I need to take in, how much water I have to take, because people with POTS can drink water like a fish, but it not stick in their body well if you don't have the right sodium level. So now I know how to kind of manage it a little better. Am I better? No. Is this a lifelong condition? Yeah. But is it something that I now have on a medical form that said this has happened, so no other doctor could dismiss my case against it, then yeah. So now when I go to schedule an appointment with a gastroenterologist, I'm going to be like, this is what I have. Can you look up anything that's related to this to see why my stomach acts the way that it does? And hopefully I can get some answers. But even just from them and from them confirming that it's POTS and doing some like daily changes, being put on a medication that helps your heart. I was put on metoprolol, which is a beta blocker. My heart rate very rarely jumps above 120, 125, and stays within normal range when I stand up for the most part. I still get dizzy. I still occasionally feel very presyncope kind of feeling, but I haven't actually passed out since I've been put on medication 2 months
ago.
That's good. Which for me was like a rarity for a while. Now I'm okay-ish. I have good days, I've got bad days. But now my bad days are taken more seriously.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I don't have to constantly tell people, I just don't feel good. Well, Kaylee, you don't ever feel good.
And that's how I feel my primary care. Like, I'm still kind of on the hunt for the right doctor. It's funny. Yep. It's not funny. But in the last 6 months, the people that I felt were the most caring in the medical field are the people that can't directly help me. I mean, yeah. one of the most helpful people was a new gynecologist that I saw, hadn't been in a few years, needed to go. But she took so long and was so genuine about what she was talking to me about. And it was before my surgery, but when we knew like this was going on. And she just stood there and was talking to me about hormones and all the things that I felt. Nurses, I had one nurse at GBMC say, I'm here to advocate for you. Like, what can I do? And that was right before we got dismissed. So, I mean, discharged. Not dismissed. That too. but discharged. And then I have a doctor that is a family member of mine, family doctor in Michigan, who couldn't really help, but like was so caring. And I know he's like that with his patients, but it's hard to come by here. So my primary care, I feel like I'm still advocating for myself.
Yeah.
I had to do kind of all the research for all of this. I had to find all the endocrinologists, like leading up to the surgery. I had to find the surgeon. I would find everybody, and then I would ask her, hey, can you send the referral here? Can you send the referral there? Instead of her saying, okay, we're going to do this blood work. She's the only one that actually saw me beforehand. She's the only one that knew that this wasn't necessarily there, or that she didn't feel it. Like, you know, that's the person that should kind of be advocating for me, because she has had a regular relationship with me for a few years. She knows that I'm not hypochondriac, for lack of a better word. She knows that I'm not in there all the time for every little thing. She knows, like, the weight fluctuations, all of that.
Yeah.
And she's not really doing a whole lot. So recently I asked her for blood work because I'm still having so many issues. I, you know, had not only the mass removed, but half my thyroid removed. So now we have new issues, you know?
Yeah.
So she's... I had blood work done and came back, and she said, okay, your blood work was normal. Literally, your blood work was normal. Have a great day. And I said, okay, but I'm consistently gaining weight, and I'm on a medication for something else that you're not supposed to gain any weight. You're supposed to kind of be losing weight. So I don't know why I've gained 30 pounds since the summer. I've gained 13 pounds since the surgery. There's some, my thyroid, I can tell, and it's not just the weight. There's other hormonal things. Right. There's hormonal acne. There's, you know, temperature things. There's just feelings, like, you know, emotions that come along with hormone. There's just a lot. And so the blood work came back not normal for me. And then I had to say that to her. I said, well, you know, this TSH number, my thyroid stimulating hormone, is more than double what it always was. So right
even
next
though
to
it's
number,
within normal range, it might not.
So, right. So she was like, well, it's normal. Well, I get that it's like in the normal range, but and I didn't know because I just don't know a lot about this. I thought, well, does it matter that it's not my normal? Does that make a difference if it's not my normal? Because May 2021 had that blood work done just routinely, I guess.
Right.
The number was like 1.2. The other day, last week, it was like 3.5 or something. Then I looked at my blood work from the hospitals from September when I started going in for the mass, and it was 1 point something. So even when I had that mass, my thyroid, everything was working correctly. But now, you know, it's not. And sure, maybe it needs more time to regulate, but it's producing more of that hormone to try to stimulate the thyroid to do what it's supposed to do. I'm pretty sure that's what it...
Mm-hmm.
Trying to educate myself online with it, but there's just things going on in there. My body is just this doesn't feel normal to me. I know that I shouldn't be gaining weight the way that I am. I know that I shouldn't have all the other things going on.
So you know that you now need to advocate to make sure your voice is heard in all of this.
And I know it just takes like that one doctor, like you had to like finally feel like
you're
listened to. And now, you know, you have medication, because I do feel like I need medication, and it's hard to, I don't know, it just, obviously it takes time to get in, but it's just hard to, you know, prove it. And when you said you couldn't imagine having something physical and not being listened to, I can't imagine having something that you can't see. And that's got to be so aggravating to people. Like,
and
it's
yeah, it is. And I mean, and I wanted to do this particular podcast because this is obviously something very close to me and close to a lot of my friends. And I don't want this podcast to be something where we're scaring you away from getting help and seeking
help.
You're
making people aware.
Right. But I do want to make people aware that, you know, you do need to advocate for yourself. If you feel like there is something truly wrong, or you feel that there is something that the doctors may have missed, it is their job to go over everything with you. And it is, and you need to be able to advocate for yourself. You need to be able to go in there and be like, you know, I feel this way. And if you can't do that for yourself, that's okay too. Then what you need to do is make sure you're bringing someone with you that can do that for you. Because I know had I had the opportunity to bring my husband with me to some of these earlier doctors, I probably would have been listened to. Don't just because they have the medical degree, don't just let them push your concerns aside.
Right, like don't go home after that first appointment and be like, okay, it was all in my head, I'm imagining it, because you're probably not. And it can be so serious. And if you don't, if you're not persistent and get tests done, like things can happen. It can get worse. Yep.
Exactly. So, and I know this is very, very common for women. I do know that it does happen with men.
Yes, but, it does.
Yeah.
Just going through it, like you and I talking, I talk to other people, and I do know of a man recently who has gone to so many different doctors because there's stuff going on, passing out in the shower, or like nerve like damage and stuff, and he's being dismissed as well.
Well, and the other thing is too, with you need to do your research.
Yes.
Because doctors don't know everything.
And that doesn't necessarily mean WebMD people. WebMD will tell you a thousand ways to die.
Here's a prime example. Okay, so my previous doctor, I go once a year, I always get checked up, and because diabetes runs in my family, I'm always getting checked for that. Mm-hmm. I told him about Camp Lejeune and the water contamination. He didn't know what I was talking about. He had no idea about it.
Okay.
So I went back to him and I printed out the paperwork that I got. And at the time, it was only 7 different diseases, which is why I didn't know about it. It was new. But he, right away, he had me get scheduled for the colonoscopy and the endoscopy both at the same time. That was not fun. I just hope they didn't use the same can. But yeah, he didn't know about this. And now it's up to, I think, like 21 different diseases.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
From that. But, you know, now he knows about it. So now
they can be informed.
And now, granted, blood work's not going to pick up everything.
I know.
Exactly.
Well,
and that's.
But you know
so
your body things. Better than anybody.
Exactly. And yes, I agree. Like, you need to be able to also come in and educate your doctor sometimes because. Mm-hmm. I mean, medical school is constantly changing. Mm-hmm. Medical terms are constantly changing. POTS was not something well-known 10 years ago.
More diseases are coming. Well, hell, we saw that with COVID.
Yeah, right? I was going to say, there's...
You're seeing new stuff all the time.
Things are changing, and the more, again, that you know about your body and making sure that you're aware of what's going on with you is important, and then some family history and
I was just going to say that,
and
family history, too.
Yeah, family history goes a long way, and which is why it's shocking to me that they were brushing your concerns aside.
Right, I was only mentioning it for,
familial
my daughter had cancer, it's possible that I could have, eventually have something as well. Yeah, and with her having, cancer and passing, a lot of friends said that because of what I went through, when their kids would get sick, it made them kind of advocate for their own kids instead of being dismissed at the hospital or wherever, and they would order CBC when they normally wouldn't have. So
I've seen what you've gone through when it's come to all that, and I know it's definitely helped me be more cautious when it's come to my kids, and definitely take more have a little bit more concern. We're not super big. Like, I'll take them to the doctors when I feel the need to. But overall, that's what we did with with my oldest daughter. Mm-hmm. And how, she had some stuff going on. And I remember being like, well, my friend went through all of this, and I don't want to go through the same thing. Can you please check?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and hers was a very crazy, rare, aggressive case. But
you brought up a good point. It does... You sharing your story helps other people, too. Yeah. You sharing her story helps other people. And
just talking about it with other, learning from you all the things that you've had to go through and other people. When I'm talking about the thyroid thing, I didn't know how many people that I know have issues with their own thyroid.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Or how many people are having issues at doctor's offices. Yeah. So it is really good to talk to people. You're not alone. If people out there are having issues with their own doctors, don't just go home and suffer. Like, there's somebody that's going
to talk to you.
Listen.
About. Yeah.
And it just sinks that it's so hard.
So, and I know that we've got to wrap it up, but if there is one thing that you want the people who are listening to know and to take away from this, what's something you'd.
Just not to be afraid to stand up for yourself. I think that just in general, I always have been, and this has been a huge, wake up learning experience for me. Just don't be afraid to stand up for yourself. Nobody's going to care more about you than you or your family and friends. Talk to them as well and know that, you're not just imagining these things. And like you said, take them with you. Advocate for yourself. Don't be afraid to. This is your life. When I started to, because it would get in my head what these doctors were saying. And I thought, I have a 9-year-old. I'm not just going to sit here and let something happen to me.
Yeah.
I have to go, because thank God it wasn't, but it could have been. My friend is going through cancer right now, and I just didn't want anything to get worse. You have to stand up for yourself, because who is going to if you don't?
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
I want to thank my guests for coming on this episode, but I really want to thank you for listening.
And I would really appreciate it if you left a review about the show or about this episode. And you can actually do that right from the website. Go to conversationswithrichbennett.com. You can leave a comment about this episode. You can leave a review for the podcast in general. Another thing I would love for you to do, of course, follow us on social media, but send me a voicemail. If there is somebody you want me to get on the show, if you want to come on the show, if there is something you would like for us to discuss, send a voicemail or send an email. If you send a voicemail, if you want, I can actually play it back on the show too. So just saying. But no, seriously, I want to thank you for listening, because if it wasn't for you, the podcast wouldn't be as successful as it is. So from the bottom of my heart, thank you very much.